The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome to the show. It is Monday, January 27th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and the news just keeps getting better and better about marijuana legalization. We're here to bring it to you every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, but we do have a little bit of a schedule change coming up this week. On Wednesday, we will just have a replay show because I will be on a train making my way down to Southern Oregon. I'll be in Ashland, Oregon on Thursday and Friday, bringing you live coverage of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, the first ever. I'll also be presenting a new presentation that I wrote up over the weekend called The Green Rush. It's a look at the different state dispensary systems and the future of the marijuana market in Oregon and elsewhere. That presentation is online right now in the 420 Radio Shop if you want to download it and take a look at it or use it for your own purposes. It comes with a full script and notes, so check that out and all of the PowerPoint downloads in the 420 Radio Shop. Now, on today's show, fantastic news out of the state of Florida, where over Friday they collected enough signatures, and today the Supreme Court has said the medical marijuana amendment can move forward and get it on the ballot for 2014. We may have medical marijuana in the South, people, by the end of this year. Also on the show, we'll have time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look at the science, the veterinary science, on whether or not marijuana can kill your dog. There's a lot of statements both ways on this, and we're going to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff and get a look at that in our radical rant at the end of the show. Also on today's show at half past, it's time for our regular visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our cannabis Q&A. You can ask live questions by dialing in to 971-533-7111 or join our chat room and ask your live questions there. Today, there has been a study that came out showing that use of marijuana during pregnancy can harm the developing brains of the fetus. The developing brain of the fetus, I should say. It'd be bad if your fetus had two brains. Regardless, we'll ask Dr. Mitch about that and find out if that's really true or not. But first, we'll start off with the 420 Radio News. Got all sorts of headlines as we're getting ready for the Super Bowl this weekend. Going to have a lot of fun there. Also, we've got Bacon Dan calling in. It's actually birthday Festivus week for me, Bacon Dan, and Herb Thrasher. We're all turning a year older this week. So we'll talk to Bacon Dan about that and get his song today for Roots Monday from Weezer. All sorts of stuff coming up, plus hour two in Toker Talk Radio. So stick around. To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. We are a full-service alternative health and wellness collective accommodating patients with natural, organic, holistic, and homeopathic remedies, nutritional guidance, advice, education, and medical cannabis fully in accordance with Oregon OMMP law. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com or by telephone at 503-853-1319. Check out our menu on Weed Maps and visit Cannabis Outreach Collective today. 420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, firedublawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, January 27th, 2014, brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition. I'm Russ Belville. Medical marijuana is headed to the ballot in Florida. The state Supreme Court, in a 4-3 decision, approved the summary language for the November election, rejecting a challenge from the state attorney general that the summary misleads voters into approving California-style medical marijuana. On Friday, the State Division of Elections determined that supporters had turned in over 710,000 valid signatures, clearing the threshold to place the measure on the ballot. The amendment needs 60% approval from the voters to be added to the Constitution. The latest polls in Florida show 73% to 82% support for the issue. The amendment may also bode well for the electoral chances of gubernatorial candidate Charlie Crist, the Republican-turned-Democrat, who seeks to reclaim the governor's office from the man who unseated him in 2011, Republican Rick Scott. Crist's boss, attorney John Morgan, is bankrolling the amendment campaign, while Scott has adamantly opposed medical marijuana. DEA Chief Michelle Lenhart is furious that President Obama told the truth about marijuana being safer than alcohol. Speaking at an annual meeting of county sheriffs, Lenhart got a standing ovation from the cops in attendance as she openly derided her boss over his recent interview, claiming Obama didn't understand the science enough to describe marijuana use as merely a bad habit. Lenhart was reportedly upset that the White House has played softball games against drug reformers and, we note, has been beaten 5-2 this year and 25-3 last year by the one-hitters, and that the White House flew a flag made of hemp over the Capitol. That flag was presented by Representative Jared Polis of Colorado, who famously got Lenhart to refuse to acknowledge marijuana is safer than heroin during congressional testimony. Lenhart also infamously referred to the massacres of Mexicans in the drug war as a, quote, signpost of success, end quote, against the cartels who are, quote, acting out like caged animals, end quote. Marijuana will compete among tomatoes, hogs, and apple pies at this summer's Denver County Fair. Tracy Weil, the fair's marketing and creative director, said, quote, "We thought it was time for us to take that leap and represent one of the things Denver has going on," end quote, referring to contests that will include off-site judging of cannabis seedlings and clones, marijuana-infused foods, glass artistry, and hemp clothing designs, as well as a joint rolling contest using oregano. There will be no cannabis on site, and entries will be displayed as photographs in an adults-only pavilion, along with contests for homemade beer, wine, and liquor. Denver's County Fair began in 2011 and also features such oddball competitions as a bicycle rodeo, a Doritos eating contest, a drag queen pageant, and Best Diorama Made with Peeps Marshmallow Candies contest. The Colorado Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case that will finally determine whether lawful medical marijuana patients can be fired for their off-duty use of pot. Brandon Coates is a quadriplegic who worked for Dish Network as a telephone operator. When he failed a random urine screening for marijuana, he cited his legal use of medical marijuana and the state's lawful off-duty activities statute, which prevents employers from firing employees for the legal activities they engage in outside of work. A trial court upheld Coates' termination, saying that the constitutional amendment legalizing medical marijuana didn't grant any rights, but merely provided exemptions from criminal prosecution. The Colorado Court of Appeals upheld the trial court, but went further in explaining that since marijuana is federally illegal, its use can't be protected by the lawful off-duties activities statute. The Supreme Court will answer whether medical marijuana use is a right and whether federal illegality matters in Colorado law. It is unclear whether Colorado's constitutional right for all adults to possess and grow cannabis will have any bearing on the judgment. 10 months worth of drug testing students involved in extracurricular activities in Edmonds, Oklahoma, has netted 8 positives out of 750 tests. The positive rate of just over 1% is far below the standard workplace drug testing positive rate of 3.5% and half the rate of drug test positive in states that require screening as a condition for getting public assistance. Welfare drug testing in Florida costs the state $35 per test. At that rate, Edmonds, Oklahoma taxpayers forked over $26,250 to catch 8 kids, which works out to over $3,000 per positive. Recent studies show little difference in current and future drug use rates among kids who attend schools that drug test and those that do not. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, January 27th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. You can get the transcripts of our 420 Radio News exclusively at the National Cannabis Coalition. Visit ncc420.com for downloads. When we come back, we'll go behind the headlines and take a deeper look at the Florida Medical Marijuana Amendment and reactions from Bob and Kathy Jordan. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. Hey, Tokers and Tokettes, Radical Russ here to introduce you to my friend Matt and all the staff at Lush LED Lighting. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED Lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. If you thought LEDs were... meet the tech of today. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Let's just say I appear at a lot of events with the masters of indoor horticulture, and the harvests I saw from Lush LED Lighting were big, tight, sticky, and very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Double your rewards and lower your expenses with Lush LED Lighting.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Drug Truth Network. Cultural Baggage, starring Dean Becker from Houston, Texas, Mondays at 8 a.m. Pacific on 420radio.org.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines, where we have learned that Florida will be the next medical marijuana state. Yes, I know I may be counting chickens before they hatch. But I think this is pretty much a done deal, folks, because the Florida Supreme Court announced today that they've approved the ballot summary language for that constitutional amendment. And that's all it needed to go forward, because on Friday, the Secretary of State's office announced that they had turned in 710,000 valid signatures. Now, the supporters had until the end of this week, February 1st, to turn in 683,000 signatures, a little more than that. And they had to come from more than half of Florida's 27 congressional districts. So they had to come from at least 14 districts. That prevents organizers from just, you know, going to Miami and, you know, the big cities and stuff and getting all the signatures. Well, the Florida Division of Elections reported 710,000 signatures, and they came from 14 different districts. This is so popular in Florida that even though the medical marijuana amendment, in fact, any constitutional amendment in Florida, has to get a 60% vote, we've seen three polls so far that put support above 70%. People United for Medical Marijuana brought out a poll that had 70% support last year. Earlier last year in August, St. Pete polls came out with 73.5% support. And the most recent poll from Quinnipiac University back in November, you know, just a couple months ago, showed 82% support for medical marijuana in the state of Florida. It's going to be on the ballot. And folks, I believe it is going to pass. Now, what had happened is the Supreme Court was asked to review the ballot language because of a challenge by the Republican Attorney General, Pam Bondi. And what Pam Bondi was saying is that the ballot summary was misleading. Now, this is the ballot summary, word for word. There's 74 words in it. Here's the summary. Allows the medical use of marijuana for individuals with debilitating diseases as determined by a licensed Florida physician. Allows caregivers to assist patients' medical use of marijuana. The Department of Health shall register and regulate centers that produce and distribute marijuana for medical purposes and shall issue identification cards to patients and caregivers. Applies only to Florida law, does not authorize violations of federal law or any non-medical use, possession, or production of marijuana. Now, what Bondi was arguing is that that first sentence allows medical use of marijuana for individuals with debilitating diseases as determined by a licensed Florida physician. She had a problem with that first sentence, and particularly the part that said debilitating diseases, because she thought that was a narrower definition than what's in the actual language. In the language, they make a definition of debilitating medical condition, and here's its definition. Debilitating medical condition means cancer, glaucoma, positive status for HIV or AIDS, Hep C, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, that's Lou Gehrig's, right? Crohn's disease, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, or other conditions for which a physician believes that the medical use of marijuana would likely outweigh the potential health risks for a patient. And that's the problem Pam Bondi had, is that this idea of other conditions would open it up to be like California, where they have any other condition language, and that anybody could get a medical marijuana card for just about any condition. The Florida Supreme Court decided, though, in a 4-3 decision, that the purpose of the amendment, allowing Floridians to use marijuana if their doctor approves, was pretty clear. The Florida Supreme, the four justices that approved the language said this: the proposed amendment has a logical and natural oneness of purpose, namely whether Floridians want a provision in the state constitution authorizing the medical use of marijuana as determined by a licensed Florida physician. The ballot title and summary fairly inform the voters of the chief purpose of the amendment and will not mislead voters who will be able to cast an intelligent and informed ballot. End quote. Now, a lot of people are looking at this as a potential windfall for Charlie Crist. Charlie Crist was the governor of Florida up until 2011. He was originally a Republican. He turned independent in the second half of his term. Then in 2011, he was defeated by Republican Rick Scott, who is currently very anti-medical marijuana. Crist now has changed from independent to Democrat. His boss is John Morgan, the Orlando attorney, who's kicked in most of the funding to get this medical marijuana amendment on the ballot. The idea being that medical marijuana, which is supported by Charlie Crist and opposed by Rick Scott, is going to bring out younger, more progressive, more liberal voters that will also tend to vote Democratic and bring Charlie Crist into the governor's office. Now, I spoke with Bob and Kathy Jordan, you know, Kathy Jordan, who has Lou Gehrig's disease. She's been fighting, and they've both been lobbying still for their act, which is at the legislature right now, which would, it, as opposed to this constitutional amendment, would also include the right to home grow. And Bob Jordan told me today that this has put a lot of pressure now on the legislators in Florida to approve some form of medical marijuana and maybe take the wind out of sails of the amendment campaign. We will be focusing on Florida as long as this campaign goes on, but I'm pretty excited to announce that it looks pretty clear to me that we'll have medical marijuana in the South. And Florida, one of the largest states in the country, will have medical marijuana come this election time. I think we ought to celebrate that.
Yeah, all I can say is woo-hoo.
I got some friends in Florida that I'll be very happy to visit, and I'll be getting myself a card, that's for dang sure. Let's celebrate. We'll be right back.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, if he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
As marijuana goes mainstream, you need to be armed with the facts. Nobody can teach you better than Dr. Mitch Earlywine, PhD. You may know Dr. Mitch from his column in High Times magazine or his weekly appearance on the Russ Belville Show. Dr. Mitch is also the author of some of the best books on marijuana science, culture, history, and health, including Understanding Marijuana, Parents' Guide to Marijuana, Pot Politics, and more. Visit Amazon.com and search for Mitch Earlywine, that's Earlywine, and order your books today. You can also contact Dr. Mitch by email at 420research@gmail.com.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word Russ to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's Russ to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everyone. 24 after the hour, and you're seeing Bacon on the web screen, and that means we've got Bacon Dan on the phone. How you doing, Dan? Glad to have you.
I am doing very good, and today is officially the start of Birthday Festivus for yours truly, so I am in an extremely good mood.
That's right. It's your birthday coming up. What day is yours?
Mine's on Wednesday.
Yours is on the 29th. Okay, so Wednesday's your birthday. Friday's my birthday. And I believe Sunday is Herb Thrasher's birthday. So, yeah, we've got Birthday Palooza.
Oh, definitely, man, definitely.
And you're finally heading into your 30s, right?
I am, yes. This is the last 36 hours of my 20s, which is a bit scary for me, but at the same time, hence why I'm celebrating as hard as I am, which coincides with today's song that I chose, because it is a song that I love to celebrate and will be not only celebrating, but singing this evening at the famous Dante's on 3rd and Burnside for Karaoke from Hell.
All right, Karaoke from Hell tonight. Maybe I'll have to come out for that. And before we get to the song, too, I also want to mention that speaking of Dante's, I'll be there tomorrow night, and I'm sure you will be, for the Ed Foreman Show. Ed's invited me to come up and do my Super Bowl pun monologue. So I'm going.
I'm looking forward to that. Actually, tomorrow's show is going to be a really strong show. We'll have you there. We'll have the coach from the new Portland Arena football team.
Oh, yeah.
Named the Portland Thunder, which makes no sense because it really doesn't thunder here. But
you're right. I was wondering why they called us the Thunder, especially when you consider that one of our big basketball rivalries is with the former Seattle Sonics that are now the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I didn't like that name choice.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb. They could have been the Portland Sasquatches. I personally would have loved that, but I can't win every time.
That would be awesome. All right, so our song today is by Weezer. Tell us a bit about it.
This is Weezer's Say It Ain't So, their second single off of the self-titled album. This is a song that means a lot to me. I've pretty much become well-known here in Portland for singing this song because I kind of really sing the hell out of it. It's just, you know, growing up, my stepfather is the one who raised me, so I had a very special connection with him. And, you know, this is a song that can really touch some painful memories in the past, but it'll help you sing it. And I really have never met anybody who can say a bad thing about this song.
All right. Well, here it is, Weezer with Say It Ain't So, and happy birthday Festivus week.
Thank you, Russ. Same to you.
All right.
Say it ain't so, whoa, whoa. are good. Also, I hear this bottle of Stevens awakens ancient feelings. Like father, stepfather, the sun is drowning in the blood.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word Russ to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's Russ to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Well, I say it'll recollect. Darling, your words to little red carpet, you need a lover that's gonna lay.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
The Hot Box Podcast, starring Matt Lee and Ian Baker from Kalispell, Montana, Wednesdays at noon Pacific on 420radio.org.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everyone. 33 after the hour, and time for our weekly dose of medicine with Dr. Mitch. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
A little cold.
A little cold. I've seen the polar vortex stuff going on up there. I'm surprised that you haven't frozen all the way through. Hey, Dr. Mitch is taking your questions right now, so you can get them in our chat room. If you add a capital Q colon at the beginning, that makes a nice little symbol, makes it easier for us to pick out. Or you can call in live at 971-533-7111. But we always open up the segment by giving Dr. Mitch the first word to tell us what's the latest in cannabis science.
Oh, thanks to you, Russ, for forwarding me a new report suggesting marijuana's use during pregnancy affects a baby's brain. Unfortunately, the headline was a little misleading because really we're talking about baby rodents here. Obviously, the idea that pregnant mothers should avoid marijuana isn't quite as controversial as they make it sound in some of these reports. I don't have the original data yet on this, so I'm unclear if they completely overdosed these poor prenatal, basically pregnant rats. But it does suggest that there may be some interference, particularly in a critical period in that second trimester during pregnancy if there's a lot of exposure to cannabis. I know I opened myself up for accusations of sexism on this, and I understand that, you know, plenty of women have used cannabis without a lot of ill effects to decrease the nausea during pregnancy, and that if they hadn't done so, they may have literally barfed so much they would have ended up dehydrated and hurt the baby indirectly that way. I still feel like there are some compelling data on this in some rodent work, but the human work really isn't panning out. We have one study suggesting higher ADHD rates once the babies reach age 10, but they never controlled for ADHD rates in the mom, so I'm apprehensive about that. And as we know, Marlene Mithra's data from the Caribbean really suggested that the women who were using cannabis there didn't seem to have a lot of problems with their kids. So we're still in a quandary about this. Better safe than sorry if you're pregnant, but I don't mean to sound sexist.
Yeah. You know, reading, this was what I had picked up from livescience.com. They said, according to its report, that they tested the marijuana effects in three ways. One way was they grew mice brain cells in THC conditions, right? A petri dish, I guess. They injected pregnant mice with THC. But the third one here, they says they studied the brains of aborted human fetuses whose mothers had used marijuana during pregnancy. Is this something that's done often?
They do that on occasion with some of the hard drugs, but it just seems like such a horrible way to try to generalize to normal babies later on. Obviously, these fetuses aborted spontaneously, it really couldn't have been a very healthy baby in the first place, so it's sort of a wrecked situation.
Oh, you know, this actually mentions elective abortions, as if the women were choosing to get an abortion. But to me, I think that would introduce the confounder of, well, these would be women who might be in worse socioeconomic situations, or there might be reasons that lead to wanting an elective abortion that would skew the results toward how their children turn out. But this is fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange procedure, that's for sure. And unfortunately, all the stuff on basically impact of drugs on unborn seems to keep pointing to alcohol as mm-hmm. one of the worst. So I feel like if we can send that message along with this, then by all means, we're really doing a nice public service.
And I think, and maybe you can speak to this, but I think that also brings up a point, you know, when we see these studies and these alarming headlines about the harm that marijuana can do, it rarely seems to be presented in comparison to what? And, you know, you kind of mentioned women who might be puking so bad from morning sickness that the dehydration would be worse than the pot, you know, and I say, you know, in comparison to what, women that are using alcohol. So how much does that need to be accounted for when we hear these kind of studies and headlines?
Well, and, you know, we're trying to get really large samples to generalize to larger populations. And in truth, we just don't have the data yet. And so as this work is done, it's really intriguing. But I do understand the message of better safe than sorry as far as this kind of stuff is concerned.
Okay. We have some questions coming in from our chat room. The first one comes from Gray Wolf, who wants to know, why do dabs make my nose run?
So obviously there aren't a lot of data published on this, but it seems to have something to do with actually the increase in heat. So it may be worth your while to try to do whatever you can to make sure the smoke from the dab has a nice long tube to cool down on before it actually reaches you. And, you know, I'm still a big fan of the vaporizer if you are afraid of blowtorches or just don't want to have a runny nose.
Okay. Another question coming in from Medigrow, Vermont, and this references recent comments by DEA Administrator Michelle Lenhart, and he asks, do you think that the DEA Administrator needs to be informed about current cannabis science?
I would be delighted to send her a free copy of Understanding Marijuana. I'm more than willing to talk to her on the phone. I just feel like the idea of keeping ahead of the curve on, some of the key drugs they're used in this country would be a great idea for the head of the DEA.
Yeah, you know, watching that that video, and maybe we'll show it in hour two, where Jared Polis is trying to get her to admit that marijuana is more dangerous than cocaine or heroin or methamphetamine, and she can't even answer that. I mean, that's pretty sad coming from the person who's supposed to be running our drug policy.
Well, and in fact, this leaning on law enforcement folks, when we really do need scientifically trained people to head that organization, has been a consistent problem throughout.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine and taking your questions in our chat room. If you've got a question on cannabis science, culture, history, or health, just get it in there in the chat, or you can dial us live at 971-533-7111. Now, I wanted to ask a question about dabs now that Grey Wolf brought the subject up, and it's more about the coughing fit that sometimes can come after the dab. I've heard anecdotally reports of people coughing so hard they pass out or strain a rib muscle or something like that. Is there any truth to that? And why perhaps are the dabs causing people, even experienced marijuana smokers, to cough in much greater fits than they do from marijuana?
In addition to the issues related to heat, that tends to be a product of this breath-holding technique, which also seems to be unnecessary based on Zachney's data with just inhaled marijuana joints. So this idea that I'm going to take this giant dab and then hold it for 45 seconds as if that's going to be some kind of way to get more THC out of it is a real fallacy. Most of the THC can be absorbed in the lung within 10 seconds or less. So you really don't need to take a giant hit at all. It's dabs, for goodness sake. And it's completely pointless to hold it in for a long time. I know it feels like you're higher, but in fact, the placebo group who just hold their breath also feel like they're higher too.
Okay. Also, I'm wondering, you're there in Albany, and of course, New York State, the governor made some news by saying he would want to try to get medical marijuana distributed through hospitals. I'm wondering if you have any updates or can say anything about what's happening there in Albany with respect to medical marijuana.
I'm a little saddened by this approach, and I feel like it puts a lot of burden on individual hospitals. There's no real plan for a source of good medical-grade cannabis, and I actually met with a cancer patient today who's pretty frustrated by this. He, you know, really could use the cannabis right now, and none of the hospitals have, you know, jumped up and really said, okay, we're willing to make this part of our program yet. So I'm grateful to the governor for, you know, moving in this direction, but I really feel like it would be much better to have something more like the medical marijuana plans we see in other states, including your home state of Oregon.
And there's been a lot of question as to whether or not it'd even be feasible to enact this New York program, given that, like you say, there's no source for the marijuana. It'd either have to come from the federal government pot farm, and we doubt they'd want to do that, or from law enforcement seizures, and who knows what's in that weed. That doesn't sound like a very good idea to me.
Well, and then trying to test that would actually be more expensive than, I think, getting some from a reasonable source.
Yeah, exactly. Another trend that's happening now with medical marijuana is we're seeing a tendency of lawmakers now in Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Alabama, and there was another state, I believe, Florida, where they had previously introduced medical marijuana bills, who have dropped those and are now introducing bills that just legalize CBD medical marijuana, you know, based on that Dr. Sanjay Gupta documentary. That's getting a lot of play, and we're hearing a lot about families leaving their states and moving to Colorado's to get this CBD oil. What does that say about the future of medical marijuana, and how do we show people the medical utility of THC?
CBD is a miraculous substance, and I don't mean to minimize its import, but THC is the clincher for a number of the effects linked to medical cannabis. So although cannabidiol can be super for, say, its anticonvulsant effects and some of the other effects that we've seen as a big help to some of these ill children, THC is the one that helps enhance appetite for cancer-related chemotherapy. All that nausea, all the vomiting and things like that seem to be related to THC. And the combination of the two can be particularly delightful for making sure the impact is as good as it can possibly be. So I feel it's kind of sad that there are laws that are going to support only CBD, particularly when there's so many people suffering from illnesses that really do require THC.
Yeah, and to me, hearing them demean THC, you know, and with CBD, they'll say, well, it doesn't get you high. Well, what? Does it get you high like OxyContin? I mean, there's a lot of medicines that get you high.
Well, and what's curious, too, is there's no appreciation for THC tolerance. So, I mean, a lot of folks know in L.A., everybody's friend Glaucoma Jim, who smokes a lot but really doesn't get high and has no subjective experience around because he's got, you know, tolerance to THC's cognitive effects. And at low doses, THC is a completely functional kind of thing, just like OxyContin, Benadryl, all these drugs that people take, and after the first couple of times, it really doesn't have any kind of cognitive impact. And so I'd be delighted if people be a little more open-minded that, guess what, THC is a whole lot like a whole lot of other medicines. Let's make sure we have access to it for the people who are, you know, the sickest of the sick.
That's right. All right, folks, we got to wind this segment up. And if you didn't get a chance to get your question in, you can always send it in by email to 420research@gmail.com. We have one last question from our chat room coming from John from A Cannabis Broadcast, who wants to know what you know about cannabis and sleep, specifically REM sleep.
So sad to say, there's some evidence that THC can suppress REM sleep. That's the sleep that's associated with the dream state, usually. And one of the alleged symptoms of cannabis withdrawal is this rebound, this sort of REM rebounds. When you give up cannabis, some of the REM sleep that you've been missing gets made up. So you have these, you know, wild dreams where, you know, clowns are juggling Scarlett Johansson. But generally, it's not a very serious thing, and if you know you're willing to make sure you take days off in between your use, the REM rebound is not a big issue.
Is that really the kind of dreams you had when you had to study for your test, Dr. Mitch?
Sad, but true.
I don't think there's anything sad about Scarlett Johansson. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Mitch, for joining us once again. Folks, we do this every Monday at 5:30, so if you want to get a question in or just want to learn more about cannabis science, listen every Monday here on 420radio.org. Dr. Mitch, stay warm, and we'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it.
When we come back, we're going to go to the veterinary sciences and ask the question, can cannabis kill your dog? The answer may surprise you. Stay tuned.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the sky.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. It's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay, read the Weed Blog today. 420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012.
You know, I've been playing rock and roll for a lot of years. I've done it all. Now I do it without drugs. Hey, don't get me wrong, I still party with the best of them, but now I do it clean. You know, I'm on top of everything I do.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
Day was hard and your work was long, and you need a break from all that's wrong. You better look at the clock, cause it's 4:19. Time to reach in that pocket for your bag of green and smoke that weed.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville.
You want answers?
I was mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Can marijuana kill your dog? As marijuana becomes more mainstream, news media are finding new ways to sensationalize their marijuana coverage. One topic that has resurfaced lately is dogs and marijuana. Specifically, is it good or bad for them? And on one side, you get news media that will say it's going to poison or kill your dog, like the recent report from NBC News, Marijuana Poisoning on the Rise in Pets. And on the other side, you got certain bloggers who shall not be named who say that marijuana is completely harmless for pets. I decided to take a look at the science because you know me, I look shit up. So can marijuana poison your dog? Now, we've been taught that marijuana is non-toxic to humans, but is it safe for your dog? Chocolate, raisins, grapes, garlic, onions, avocado, and macadamia nuts are delicious to us, but can range from sickening to life-threatening to your dog. And while everything more evolved than a sea squirt has an endocannabinoid system, can human-level quantities of weed overload a small dog's endocannabinoid system? In that aforementioned NBC News story, Dr. Tina Wismer, who is the director of the Animal Poison Control Center, explained, quote, "Animals don't react the same way as humans. Without treatment, dogs can go into comas and die," end quote. Now, Dr. Wismer singled out medicated edibles with high THC concentrations as the most dangerous to canines, especially if combined in chocolate brownies or raisin cookies. A 2012 study that was published in the Journal of Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care followed 125 dogs in Colorado that presented with marijuana ingestion from 2005 through 2010. Authors concluded, quote, "Ingestion of baked goods made with medical-grade tetrahydrocannabinol butter resulted in two deaths," end quote. However, according to the Coloradoan, those two dogs died when they asphyxiated on their own vomit. That's sad, to be sure, but can you really call that marijuana toxicity? Now, the Coloradoan also spoke with Ashley Harmon, who's a veterinarian at Fort Collins Veterinary Emergency and Rehabilitation. She says she's seen more cases of people bringing in dogs who've ingested marijuana. She also says she's seen two smaller dogs die from marijuana ingestion. One who ate a pound of pot brownies, a pound, and another who ate a pound of pot butter. But is it the marijuana that's harming those dogs or the ingredients in those edibles? Now, in 2013, researchers writing in the journal Topics in Companion Animal Medicine wrote, quote, "The minimum lethal oral dose for dogs for THC is more than 3 grams per kilogram of the dog's body weight. Although the drug has a high margin of safety, deaths have been seen after ingestion of food products containing the more concentrated medical-grade THC butter," end quote. So this is a 2013 study saying 3 grams per kilogram oral dose of THC is going to kill a dog. But 40 years prior, in 1973, scientists writing for the Journal of Toxicology and Applied Pharmacology noted, quote, "In dogs and monkeys, single oral doses of delta-9 THC and delta-8 THC between 3,000 and 9,000 milligrams per kilogram were non-lethal," end quote. Now, 3,000 milligrams, that's 3 grams, right? 9,000 milligrams, that's 9 grams. So, 40 years ago, 3 to 9 grams of THC per kilogram of body weight was non-lethal to a dog, but last year, 3 grams THC per kilogram of body weight is the minimum lethal dose. Are you confused yet? Well, consider this. In those studies, that's 3 grams per kilogram of THC given orally, not just pot itself. A 2004 review published in the Journal of Veterinary and Human Toxicology looked at 213 incidents where dogs ate actual pot from 1998 through 2001. And they said, quote, the marijuana ingested ranged from 1/2 to 90 grams. Oh, I'd be pissed at my dog. 90 grams. Oh, man. 3 ounces gone. They continued. The lowest dose at which signs occurred was 84.7 milligrams per kilogram, and the highest reported dose was 26.8 grams per kilogram. That's almost an ounce, right? So they found that even with a dog eating almost an ounce of ganja per kilogram of its weight, quote, all followed animals made full recoveries, end quote. Okay, so dogs eating an ounce of weed per kilogram of weight, dog eating up to 90 grams, you know, up to 3 ounces, over 3 ounces, all the dogs recovered just fine. Now, how about in terms of pure THC injected into a dog rather than eaten? Because they've done a lot of studies on THC, and they use all these animals to study it, right? Well, in 1983, researchers found, quote, the dose of THC, which kills 50% of animals, that's a figure we call LD50, a dose of THC, which kills 50% of animals when administered intravenously, is 130 milligrams per kilogram in the dog. Now, for comparison's sake, pure synthetic THC Marinol pills that are prescribed to humans come in 2.5 milligram, 5 milligram, and 10 milligram oral dosages. And the THC you'll get in a package of Colorado medicated edibles, by law, is going to be somewhere between 50 and 125 milligrams. So, can marijuana kill your dog? Technically, yes. But realistically, probably not. Your dog would have to eat a pound or more of strong pot or edibles and be a smaller sized dog. And you'd have to ignore its symptoms. And the dog would have to experience some really bad luck, like passing out and choking on its own vomit. Or there was this one case in New Zealand where a Chihuahua experienced hypothermia and almost died from hypothermia because, you know, that same blood vessel dilation that makes our eyes red when we smoke pot. Well, that works on the capillaries of the dog as well. And, you know, Chihuahuas, they don't have that fur on the top of their skin, right? So all the blood vessels on the top of the skin of this dog started radiating away all this little 1 pound dog's heat. And they almost lost it because of that. So numerous veterinarians have written about the possibility of coma and death in rare cases from marijuana ingestion. But they all know that most dogs will recover if given proper care. Cheryl K. Smith, writing for Compassion Center in Eugene, Oregon, identifies the common signs of canine marijuana ingestion and suggests the following regimen. Quote, the most common clinical effects of marijuana ingestion in pets are depression and listlessness, ataxia, which is loss of motor coordination and balance, vomiting, and hypothermia. The animal's eyes are often dilated and he may lose his appetite and not drink enough water. Other signs can include bradycardia, which is a slow heartbeat, or tachycardia, a fast heartbeat, agitation, vocalization, vomiting, diarrhea, hypersalivation or drooling, urinary incontinence, seizures, and in severe cases, coma or death. The neurotoxic effects of cannabis ingestion in animals usually occur within a half hour to 2 hours of eating it and usually last for about 12 hours. However, they can last for days because of the cannabinoids that are stored in fat. The main treatment for marijuana toxicity, and again, I would just call it marijuana ingestion, is to give the animal activated charcoal orally. Don't put it anywhere else, right? Activated charcoal can be purchased at a drugstore or a feed store, and it's just a good product to have on hand overall. The activated charcoal traps toxins as it goes through the digestive system. Other treatments include keeping the pet warm, you know, that hypothermia thing, minimizing sensory stimuli, you know, light, noise, and so on. And if the dog has vomited or had diarrhea, give the dog fluids. If you discover marijuana ingestion right away, take your pet to a veterinarian who can induce vomiting. But after about a half hour, the anti-nausea effects of cannabis make it more difficult to induce vomiting. And if the animal's lethargic, the vomiting may lead to aspiration and asphyxiation. So again, if you've got accidental canine marijuana overdose, I think the reason we may be seeing more of it is because now that it's legal, people are more likely to bring their pet in rather than just wait and see if it turns out okay. And now that it's legal, more people are careless about leaving their weed around. So we don't need to overreact to this, but please keep your weed out of the reach of your pets and your kids. Hey, that's all the time we got, but stay tuned. Hour two is next. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at radicalrus.com. You're taking seeds, you're planting, you're growing, you're growing.